right now, it's time for History Matters, and we are joined in the studio by the one and only Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire and all-around great guy in the studio to talk about this week in history. How are you?
You know, I think it's great, Aaron, how you predict the rain and then it happens.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That is really, that's a talent.
We're getting pretty good at this.
It is. This
we
is
meteorologists who...
Yeah, exactly. That's what history is made of, those moments where you go, okay.
Well, it's a really interesting thing. I was reading a book. Michael Lewis just wrote a book. I think he published it last year called The Fifth Risk, which was kind of about how the Trump administration came in and didn't really care about data collection and really scaled back on caring about that and how important data collection actually is in terms of being able to make predictions about things like the weather. And there's a whole chapter about meteorology and the way that they have been able to collect just a mountain of data and information about weather so that we can now make really, really accurate predictions about what the weather is going to be tomorrow or 3 days from now or 5 days from now. Because it used to be like even 5 or 10 years ago, you'd get a weather forecast and is it going to be right? Is it not? You really have no idea. Better chance than not. But if it's wrong, it's not a surprise. But now, when you turn on the TV or the radio and the meteorologist says, this is what the weather is going to be tomorrow, that's almost always what the weather is going to be tomorrow. And we just that was imperceptible that happened.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating.
It especially now with so much climate change going on. To be able to have that kind of accurate prediction. But databases, collecting things, I mean, you and I know from dealing with a lot of older sources where there are transcriptions, how much we're in debt for people just patiently, methodically collecting a huge amount of data that you go back and then later on somebody says, oh my gosh, this is the missing piece we needed.
And,
that's true.
And oftentimes just looking somewhere where you're not even thinking to look for the missing piece, and oh, there it is.
You know, and that's what we try to do here every week. We try
we
to
find
the missing
piece. There it is,
Exactly. And, you know, people wonder, how do we do this? Well, we cull through lots of international, national, regional, and we sift it, and things jump out. And this week,
and by we you mean you. I mean, let's
You're
be
very...
honest with the microphones on. You do the work of compiling all of this information. Well, I'm just along for the ride here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you're so good at being able to say, all right, where is he going to go this time? Which direction are we going to head this week?
I'm good at getting in a car and let someone else drive me. That's I'm excellent at
that. You know, and I get excited. I think, oh, I've seen it all. And then this week I go, oh wait, you know, this is really cool. This week, marks the date on August 18th, 1920, when the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified, giving women the right to vote. Now, the interesting thing is Tennessee is the deciding vote, but actually it could have been North Carolina, except my understanding is one of the legislators was locked in a bathroom, so they couldn't actually finish the vote, and that's why he went to Tennessee. Isn't that just a bizarre piece of history?
Men.
But yes, but this week, though, is filled with incredible stories of women who have made a difference. I mean, it just happens to be this way. No surprise. But here's a couple of names. All right, birthdays, August 12th. One is Catherine Lee Bates, the American poet who wrote the words to the national hymn, America the Beautiful.
Right.
But here's a name that we don't know very often.
Okay.
But you will know all of her books. Her name was Zerna Addis Sharp, born in 1889. She lives until 1981. Now you'd think, this is a name we should all know. It's a great trivia name.
It's a great name.
Addis,
yeah.
It is. We've
it's
talked
one of these
about
great
this
history
one
names.
Of these
yeah.
Really great names. She is the author who created the Dick and Jane primary readers.
Oh,
run,
interesting.
Run, spot, run, see, spot,
yeah,
run.
Yeah, yeah.
Zerna did that. Isn't that amazing?
Interesting. Okay.
Oh, wow. That's one thing. All right. Now, August 12th has a little sadder note. That's when Heather Hare up in Charlottesville, Virginia, 2 years ago in 2017, died tragically when she was just peacefully protesting and standing up voices of hate, and car ran into her and killed her. And so we at least need to acknowledge there is somebody standing up, and we need to all do
now
that.
A lot of people standing up.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And this week also, we also see Virginia Dare being born in along the coast. Yep. And conceivably, supposedly, the first child born in the Americas to English parents. And that's August 18th, 1587. She's named in honor of the Queen of England, Elizabeth I. And her parents were members of this Roanoke colony. Well, then the boat goes back. But the Spanish War intervenes with England, and there's a delay getting back. And 3 years to the day, August 18th, 1590, boats return, and of course the colony is gone, only
right.
with that one word that's up there now that we don't really know. It's Croatoan.
Yeah,
exactly. We don't know really what this refers to.
Exactly.
But, still, it's very interesting. Disappears into myth, and people down in that area think that when they see a white deer, that's just her reincarnated spirit, which is a touching thing. But
yeah.
There's a couple other ones here that are more contemporary that we need to at least highlight. One is in 1960, August 16th, 1966, actually, a group led by a local activist, Margaret Nygaard, and her husband, Holger, they voiced opposition at a Durham City Council meeting to a plan to dam the Eno, because at that point they were trying to think about water sources for drinking.
Right, right.
And she says no. And so she's a Durham teacher, a social worker, and she gets together other people, and they begin to form a partnership, and eventually a state park is proposed, and of course the Eno River Park continues today. And part of that abuts into Orange County, where we have the Okanichee Mountain National or state park that becomes part of this Eno project too. So, you know, that's a one person standing up saying this is important for future generations.
I was thinking about this story, and it's a great story about sort of one person raising their voice. Had they gone ahead and dammed the Eno River, we would be celebrating this great lake that now exists as this place for recreation. And had the Jordan Lake also dammed? Had that lake not been dammed, and someone stood up and said, "Let's not do that," we'd be celebrating that person in the park that exists there.
That's right. Kind of amazing to think, like, what is this possible? But it is. It shows the power of one person. There's another one that happens this week too. And it's on August 15th, 1973.
This is the story that I'm, this is another example of one person standing up and saying no.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And this was, her name was Carolista Fletcher Baum.
Which is another great historical name. Not as great a historical name as Holger Nygaard. Let's just pause and just recognize the awesome historicalness of that name.
These are really interesting names.
And, all right, Carolista Fletcher Baum.
So her kids come and tell her that there seems to be some bulldozer at the dune that they like to play at, we know as Jockey's Ridge. And she says, oh, heck no, goes down there, stands in front of the bulldozer.
Because they're going to take down the dune for development, right?
Yeah. And she says no, and keeps talking with the bulldozer operator until he finally says, oh, heck with it. I'm done for the day. Leaves. She takes the distributor cap off it. So again, and then begins raising the alarm, and then drives up to Raleigh for the next 3 weeks, just adamant about this, until eventually the legislature agrees and says, that's right, this should be a state park, and it does. The power of one person, in this case, one woman, again and again and again, which makes a difference. This particular week, when women get the vote, I just think, you know, the line between coincidence and synchronicity is sometimes kind of thin, as we found.
But now Jockey's Ridge State Park, because one woman stood in front of a bulldozer and said, don't take this down. Now is that the most popular state park in North? It's got to be up there,
right?
Like, you go out to the Outer Banks, you do the hang glide. Brad and I did the hang gliding at Jockey's Ridge a couple of years ago. It was fantastic.
Well, now you know who to thank.
And then people go in the evening for the sunset, and there's this huge crowd of people that are just sitting on the dunes watching the sun go down. I presume also in the morning to watch the sunrise, but we are not morning people. So,
but that's wonderful. I mean, that's a firsthand account of the impact that had
of
one person standing up and being an advocate.
Yeah.
There's another one on August 13th. And it's a local connection here, Madeline Battle Hancock. Now, there's a
that's a good name.
And she becomes the most decorated nurse with the Allied forces in World War I. And she actually was, I think, born in Florida, but grew up in Asheville, where her father was a physician and outspoken community leader. And she marries this fella, Mortimer Hancock. We're talking about unusual names.
Yep, yep.
Who's British. And so she moves there, and then World War One starts, and she has training and goes over to Belgium. And on August 13th, 1914, she goes to Antwerp, Belgium. And they eventually give her this nickname of Glory because she is just ferociously dedicated. She also, in 1918, a letter I read, she said, war is hell. This mm-hmm. is not somebody who celebrated this, but she just laments sometime whether she could really keep doing it. But she was
she'd been doing it for 4 years
in the worst war ever.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, it's just astonishing to think about what was happening. But there's a person that has a connection with North Carolina.
All right. Awesome.
Okay. So
Speaking with Scott Washington, we got time for two more. What do we got?
Two more.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, here's one that, everybody's seen the iconic image. The end of World War II.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Albert Eisenstadt, the photographer for Life magazine, captured the fellow, the sailor, kissing the nurse in Times Square. Mm-hmm. We all can see it in our imaginations. And so Eisenstadt, he actually took some pictures, and but didn't have time to get the names. Well, years later, a North Carolina native, Glenn McDuffie, claimed he was, and he went to great lengths to prove he was the sailor.
Mm-hmm.
Even hired a forensic artist with the Houston Police Department who actually concluded, yep, that looks pretty close, I'd say definitely.
The guy he hired to convince everyone that he was the sailor said that he was the sailor. I like that. That's one of those synchronicity things there.
Yeah. But they, apparently it's close enough, and I'm sure there was a lot of other kissing going on in Times Square, but still, that's a nice
We'll go with it. Glenn McDuffie. He was the sailor.
That's right.
Now we've got half the mystery solved. We need to know who the nurse was.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's see. Another one is, let's see. I kind of liked the U.S. Postal Service in 1970 becomes independent of the government. Now, I say I like it only because we need to know that.
Yeah.
Because the Postal Service is ubiquitous. It's part of our lives. We think, we couldn't do without it. But they've had to do this by themselves instead of being funded, which is a huge deal. And also, now, there's one more woman that we've got to celebrate.
Yeah.
Ann Davidson, who was the first woman to sail solo across the Atlantic. She began in Plymouth, England in May of 1952. It takes her to August 12th of 1953.
Wow.
To arriving in Miami, Florida, aboard her 23-foot sailboat. And again, what it did, at least in that time, is once again set the standard that nothing is impossible.
Yep.
That, again, gender is not a determining factor, just like it is whether it's race or sexual orientation or whatever, that these prejudices that people have, they fall by the wayside again and again. And it's thanks to people taking a courageous stance oftentimes and being an advocate for things that we need to know about.
Well said. Scott Washington, History Matters. As always, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Aaron.